Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hey, parents. Looking for something fun to listen to in the car with your kids? Blippi and Mika have a brand new podcast, Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. Each week, the Blippi Mobile will take your kids to amazing places. Your kids will learn awesome new things about the places and things they see and hear. It's a fun, interactive listening experience for the whole family. Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome back to another Sunday night edition of the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Harris. With me, as always, is Mike Tagliere. You can find us on Twitter at DanHarris80 and at Mike Tagliere NFL tags. Let me ask you something. We've been watching football for a pretty long time. Have you ever seen a day with quite this much quarterback news since basically you were a kid?
It was straight up bad quarterback day. Andrew Luck, Cam Newton ended up putting together a solid fantasy day on like a stat line, but it was such bad play surrounding the quarterback position today. It was just pitiful. I think that's probably my biggest takeaway from today is that the quarterback play was just like brutal, legit brutal. And it was a pain watching a lot of these games.
Yeah. Well, we are recording this in the middle of the afternoon games, as we always do. So at least Drew Brees is showing everyone how to play quarterback once again. Well, in addition to the bad play, there was a lot of news. Marcus Mariota re-injured his elbow. Alex Smith injured, out for the season. Even Cam Newton left briefly with an injury. He did come back. Ryan Fitzpatrick was benched. The Ravens started a running back at quarterback. It was really crazy. It was a nutty day. So we usually lead in, as we always do, with the biggest takeaway. But is your big takeaway just that, wow, quarterbacks stink today?
Well, that's probably my overall takeaway. If there's one player that you want to take away from, I think it's the whole Gus Edwards kind of going off performance. And the thing is I was big on Alex Collins this week. I felt like even if they ran a timeshare that he would get close to the 100-yard mark, he'd score at least one touchdown, maybe two. And the process was right. Unfortunately, I could not predict the Ravens giving a guy that had 5 carries in his previous 3 games 17 carries. and obviously he panned out with 115 yards and a touchdown. So it's a little disappointing, but I think that's the biggest noteworthy performance because they were coming out of a bye week, which tells me that Gus Edwards might be the guy going forward.
Yeah. I was definitely going to ask you about that because I think most of us were pretty optimistic, not only just because of the schedule generally, but Marty Morningweg was the offensive coordinator for the Eagles when Michael Vick was there, right? With LeSean McCoy. Greg Roman, the assistant head coach, was there with the 49ers with Colin Kaepernick and with the Bills with Tyrod Taylor. They know how to do an offense when you have this running QB like they did, which was great. And we all just assumed it was going to be Collins. And frankly, Collins got an early touchdown. And I said, okay, here we go. We're off and running. But Gus Edwards, and to be fair, this wasn't just like, hey, let's just go with Gus Edwards because we like Gus Edwards and we're feeling Gus Edwards. He was great. 17 carries, 115 yards and a touchdown. So that's what, all right, let's start there. Do you think that next week, do you think that Gus Edwards is going to be ranked higher than Alex Collins?
I do. Something happened here and I don't know what it is. I really don't know what it is. If he's just better suited with Lamar Jackson there, I don't know. They're saying that basically he was better suited to the game plan that they ran today. And if Lamar Jackson's under center, how do we say that it's not the same game plan going forward? Maybe they throw the ball a little bit more because, they came somewhat predictable as the game went on. But he played 49 snaps. Going back to the previous, 3 weeks we could talk about, he played 2 snaps in week 9, 8 snaps in week 8, 7 in week 7. So it's like he was not a part of the game plan. He was coming off the bench. He was what he was. And it really says a lot when you come out of the bye week and see this. because like that's when teams have time to change things that they've been doing and kind of like install something new. And knowing that Lamar Jackson was in there and him alongside of him, obviously they feel like there's something here. And being he performed so well, it's hard to say that he shouldn't have the job going forward, even if it was against a terrible, terrible Bengals defense.
Yeah, but I mean, Alex Collins didn't run well when he was in there. You know, that's the thing. So I do think, frankly, that Edwards is going to be the guy. And again, it's early. By the time you listen to this, we may have more word. But the latest I heard is that John Harbaugh is pretty pessimistic about Flacco's availability next week against the Raiders, which is a great matchup. So Gus Edwards, I have a feeling you and Bobby will be talking about him quite a bit on your waiver wire show. So other than Edwards, who's your big winner for the day?
I think it's the Saints as a team. Like, honestly, like, you know, week after week, they seem to be getting it done. And they're just, it's not a team that's standing in their way. And they're kind of making a statement every single week. I keep waiting for like a letdown week because I think every team has that at some point, you know, unless you're talking about like the 16-0 Dolphins or whatever. But I honestly just don't know. I don't know if they have a weakness right now. Like, that defense is getting a little bit better. Their pass rush has been better. And the secondary is still like the part that could be attacked. But we saw them beat the Rams, who have the best offense in football. So I don't know, man. Like, this Saints team is just looking unbeatable, and they're sticking it to the Eagles right now. And it's 38-7 as we're recording this. It's on in the background for me.
By the way, there's 13 minutes left in the fourth quarter, just to be clear.
Embarrassing them. They're just straight up embarrassing them. They're like making a statement right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing with the Saints. You really feel if they wanted to, they could put up 60 a game. If they really were just like, no, we're going to just put our foot on the gas no matter what. And if their defense wasn't so good, they could really do that. I mean, they score at will pretty much anyway. But that's the thing. Their defense has been especially, I mean, the football season is a lifetime. And the first game, you remember, they got destroyed by the Bucs. Not destroyed, but they gave up a million points to the Bucs. And I remember us all sort of saying like, well, I guess our takes on their defense was wrong. But no, they look strong overall. Absolutely. And you and I were mentioning it before the podcast. It is going to be an awesome playoffs, especially with the Rams coming in there. A lot of good teams, exciting teams. So they are one certainly to watch going forward without a doubt. How about your biggest loser, Tex?
I have like a combination of teams here. It kind of mixes in. By the way, Alvin Kamara just scored another touchdown. yeah, so the Jags, the Eagles, and the Packers. I think they're all done. I think they're all out of the playoff race. I think they're done. I don't think Mike McCarthy has it in him to get a team to come back and win. You know, what do they need to win? At least four games for the next five games. Maybe actually
they're 4-5-1, I think, right?
Is it 4-6-1 now? Wait, it is 4-5-1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're really going to have to go on a win streak. Maybe one more loss they can afford, but at best. Yeah. No, I mean, I think they probably are. I love Aaron Rodgers. I didn't mean to cut you off, by the way. I love Aaron Rodgers. We all do. And all fantasy owners are sitting there and begging for sort of Mike McCarthy. No, it's no more indicative than the fact that it took him so long to do what we all knew he should do from the start, which is start Aaron Jones, right? We've all been screaming for it, Aaron Jones, Aaron Jones, Aaron Jones. And of course, he's doing well. With regard to the Jaguars, I totally agree. This loss, if for no other reason than emotionally, it's just got to be an absolute killer. If you didn't watch the game, the Jaguars had complete control of the game all day. They were up 16-0, and they lost in a last second QB sneak, essentially, to Ben. But yeah, it's tough. This is the time where, you know, NFL teams are sort of realizing who's in and who's out, and the teams you mentioned are probably out. I am going to hold out hope that the Packers can somehow go on a run, but their schedule is not super pretty going forward. But
do not say you're holding out hope.
Look, okay. As a Jets fan, I get to do what I want. All right, buddy. I haven't had an actual
shenanigans.
Truth to
root
all right,
for me.
All right, I always root for you, Tags, of course. but you know, if we're talking a wild card, we'll give him a wild card. You can have the division.
I don't want to play Aaron Rodgers in the playoffs, so okay. I want him out.
All right, duly noted. I'll make that happen for you then. Cool. You know, in addition to regular NFL teams, sort of kind of realizing that some of their seasons are over, so are some fantasy owners. You know, a lot of times, you know, we're in week 11 at this point. Some of you may have been eliminated. And that's why, frankly, personally, I love playing on FanDuel. DFS is always fun, but especially at this time of the year, I really, really love it because some of your teams are just out of it completely and there's nowhere else to turn. But with FanDuel, you can essentially be in the playoffs every week. Contests range from like a quarter to significant entry fees. So if you had a bad day today, you have a bad taste in your mouth, get started immediately and you can make amends with contests that start on Monday night and include the early game for Thanksgiving. Just go to FanDuel.com, start winning some money and really, you know, drown some of your sorrows. So we talked, Tags, a little bit about the Thursday night game, but let's get into a little more. Seahawks 27, Packers 24. Now with the Seahawks, You had the split in the backfield. Carson saw 30 snaps. Mike Davis saw 22 snaps. Rashad Penny saw 17 snaps. Now, Penny broke off the early run that looked really good, but it looked like he tweaked his ankle a little bit, but he was in and out. So I don't know. What's your general feeling on the run game going forward?
That it's Chris Carson's backfield still. That basically they've proven when he's in the lineup, like he's getting 15 touches a game, and he's the one that's worth playing. Mike Davis has a role in the passing game, so he's like... To me, Mike Davis is like the handcuff to him because he's more game script proof when it comes to of the two running backs, because Rashad Penny is not involved in the receiving game at all. So he's essentially a two down back in an offense that they have a three way timeshare. So it's Rashad Penny is nothing more than a weak handcuff to me at this point. I don't really feel the need to own him. And I kind of felt that way once we found out Carson was going to come back for this week. I wasn't willing to spend a whole bunch of a fab budget on him. So not really excited about the backfield. And as for the receivers, you know, so many people are like, oh, my God, Doug Baldwin finally has a day. I kind of talked about it in the primer, because if you looked at over the last like 3 weeks for the Seahawks coming into this game, they had all totaled the same amount of targets. Doug Baldwin, David Moore, and Tyler Lockett, all of them. And it was only a matter of time before Doug Baldwin started getting some of that touchdown luck. He plays in the slot. He's going to see some of the best matchups most of the time. And it just happened to pan out for him this time. So, you know, stuff was going to go against Tyler Lockett, who was catching a touchdown, I think, every 6.2 or 6.8 targets coming into that game. So it was bound to catch up to him at some point. So nothing too shocking in this game outside of the fact that Marquez Valdez-Scantling, just 3 targets, 1 catch for 8 yards. It was a disappointing performance for sure. But if you're in a fantasy league where I know ESPN, their trade deadline is coming this coming week, if you could trade for Valdez-Scantling right now, I actually would. You have Jimmy Graham, who's going to be out for at least a month. He's probably out for the rest of the season. You have no true passing down option out of the backfield. Aaron Jones is contributing for sure, but it's not like he's a Chris Thompson type receiver. Randall Cobb's been dinged up. He's been bad. Equanimeous St. Brown is just a guy. I feel like Valdez-Scantling is going to deliver high-end wide receiver 3 numbers, and if you can get him for really cheap right now, and judging by my Twitter feed after that game, I'm guessing he's very close to being dropped by a few fantasy teams. I would trade for him right now.
I've definitely seen him dropped in certain leagues. And I mean, look, it was troubling because he just didn't seem to get any looks, even though, look, everything you're saying was, I mean, Graham was out for most of the game. St. Brown just kind of looks like he doesn't really know what he's doing. Half the time he looks like he might not know the plays exactly. So I really was surprised to see Valdez-Scantling get this little. But, you know, look, if, you know, their schedule going forward, they've got the Cardinals, they've got the Falcons, they've got the Jets. They have some good matchups. Not all of them, but they have some good matchups for wide receivers. And, you know, would it be fair to say, Tex, because we use this line often, when you're looking at a guy like Valdez-Scantling, he sort of does fit into that wide receiver 3 mold that you're like, well, you can think about him, but he's not going to be a must-start option for you going forward, right? I mean, he's going to be a guy with in that mold, but essentially has more upside than a lot of the other guys.
That's why I think he probably is a play, because when you look at the wide receiver landscape, I mean, I look at those guys and you saw Amari Cooper have a down week this week. You saw Corey Davis, the guy who's been getting targets. Now he might have to go forward. Blaine Gabbert is his quarterback. You have Sammy Watkins, who's dealing with foot injuries, and he might miss tomorrow night's game. Dealing with foot injuries as a wide receiver is bad. Like it's nothing but bad news. So like when you get through those players, I have Valdez-Scantling as my number 27 receiver rest of the season. So that almost puts him in every week starting territory. It's not to say that he's going to produce every week. He's not. Like, that's just the nature once you get outside the top, you know, 15, 20 wide receivers. But I do prefer my wide receivers to be attached to elite quarterbacks. And I think Aaron Rodgers is obviously that. So knowing he's the number 2 option in this offense, like clear cut number 2 option, I'm still down with starting Valdez-Scantling on an almost every week basis.
Yeah. And just to be clear, I'm not really disagreeing. I'm more just probing you because frankly, I have him around there too. I think I had him 28 coming in. I will probably drop him a spot or two, I'm thinking, just as I'm eyeballing my rankings right now. But yeah, that's about where he's going to be. And it's a disappointing effort. But again, when you get to that range, there are no guys that never have disappointing weeks. You know what I mean? Every single one of those guys is going to be hit or miss. And it was really disappointing, but, you know, maybe take some solace in the fact that they lost, and maybe that, although Davante Adams was preposterous. So
he's good.
I'm not really sure. Right. He's a ball. I mean, he is probably, you know, easily a top 5 receiver, frankly, at this point. Mm-hmm. But in the end, Valdez-Scantling, he is going to have his days. I would not drop him if you have him going forward. And again, they have some fairly decent matchups going forward. The one thing I do want to mention on Baldwin is, it, to be fair, he did mention that basically this is the healthiest he's felt all season. So if you're looking for optimism for him after the nice game, it could definitely be something that sticks going forward. Coming to today's games, Cowboys 22, Falcons 19. If you own the field goal kickers in this game, you are a happy person. 7 field goals on each side. Look, for the Cowboys, I'm sorry, 7 field goals total, not for each side. Obviously, that would have been a little weird. Cowboys, it's about as good a matchup as there is for running back, and Ezekiel Elliott certainly did not disappoint. 23 carries, 122 yards, and a touchdown on the ground. 8 targets and 7 catches for 79 yards through the air. Good for them. To me, again, the only thing that really stuck out here was Amari Cooper, and we basically just probably gave the analysis, which is when you're in that range, there are going to be games like this. But really, the thing that stuck out to me is that he saw 18 targets in his first 2 games with the Cowboys, even though Dak threw 32 times, just 5 targets here, 3 catches, 36 yards. So you're basically just saying, look, this is going to be what it is, and my ranking on Cooper isn't really changing going forward. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's actually it, right where I'm at. I actually have him at 21 for the rest of the season, so I do feel like he's going to be like an every week play. I say that because of his schedule. Over the remaining 5 weeks of the fantasy season, he's going to play the Redskins, the Saints, the Eagles, the Colts, and the Bucks. Those are all plus matchups as far as I'm concerned. And like the Redskins next week, that's going to be on Thanksgiving. So, like they've been really good against the run. They've struggled over the last 3 weeks. So I don't know if it's a trend developing or if it was just basically the competition, what they game planned for. And then after that, obviously Saints should be a shootout. The Eagles secondary is banged up. They have no talent back there. The Colts, they're okay. And then the Bucks, you know, these are all matchups that you're going to want to play Amari Cooper. So if you could trade for Amari Cooper after a down week, I would do that.
Yeah, for sure. Again, I probably said it twice already, and this podcast is about 15 minutes old, but in the end, this is what it is, guys. There are going to be times like this for all receivers. I don't know, outside of the top 12, outside of the top 15, these games sort of happen, and it was just the way it did. So I would not be concerned with Cooper going forward. I'm very happy he's off the Raiders, and I think that his, generally, other than today, his good production with the Cowboys should continue. On the Falcons side of the ball, tags, I'm not really sure what you want to take away. Julio Jones finds the end zone for the 3rd straight game, which is great, but I'm not sure if there's anything that really stuck out to you here.
Not really. No, not really a whole lot. I mean, they didn't run the ball much. I mean, Tevin Coleman, 8 carries. I thought they should have ran the ball more. Dallas was allowing chunks of yardage seemingly quite a bit. You know, the offensive line for the Falcons did play better than I thought they would against the pass rush. Matt Ryan was sacked 3 times, but it could have been a lot uglier, honestly, with them losing the offensive lineman that they have. But nothing crazy from this game. I just think that, you know, touchdown regression was always going to hit Calvin Ridley, and it was going to go towards Julio Jones, which is why he was like the best trade target like forever. Even though people were like, Julio Jones doesn't score. He just puts up 1,000 yards in 10 games.
Right.
Crazy talk.
The complaining about Julio Jones was really aggravating. Every year, I know. But this is great. This is how it is. This is, you know, he's playing exceptionally well, and it's finally finding the end zone. So fantasy owners can be happy, which is good. I agree. Very little takeaway from the Falcons side of the ball. So just business as usual, pretty much. What you thought about the guys before, you should probably still think about them now. Lions 20, Panthers 19, pretty surprising. Marvin Jones was out of this game, and frankly, I don't think, it's just a bone bruise in his knee, but it doesn't sound particularly good. I don't think he was anywhere close to playing in this game, and I think he went somewhere for a second opinion, so I'm really not sure that you should be thinking that he's going to be back for the Thanksgiving game. But the bigger injury news is clearly Kerryon Johnson. He left here with a knee injury. The early word, Ian Rappaport tweeted out, it's not an ACL tear, which of course is good. It's some sort of sprain, but he is having an MRI, and it's a Thanksgiving game, as I just said. So my guess is he's probably going to be out this week against the Bears, but I don't know, Tags, if you were watching this closely, if you saw it, how it looked to you?
Yeah, I saw the play, and when it happened, it didn't seem like that there was like a major injury, but there were some doctors that kind of look at film and they try and give their analysis on it. And they said, one of them did say that he was worried it could have been the ACL. But Rappaport, I want to say that they're not certain that it's not a torn ACL. They do believe that it's an ACL injury, but they don't think it's torn. So it's like a bunch of language here. It's about, so in the end result, like best case scenario, he misses like 2 weeks. Like, I think that's best case scenario right now. And Kerryon Johnson, I am confident in saying that I do not think he plays Thursday against the Bears. Marvin Jones also seemingly going to be out against the Bears. So, you know, this is a team that's going to be missing some options. Kerryon Johnson looked fantastic before this happened. And now it's like you have to wonder, are they mad that they let go of Amir Abdullah? I don't think it really matters much because it's not like the Lions are going to make a playoff run or anything.
Well, let me ask you something. What do you think happens? Because, you know, regardless of this injury, I felt like I want to talk to you a little bit about Theo Riddick, at least in PPR or half PPR leagues, because he had 15 targets the last 2 games. He had 7 targets here. Without Marvin Jones, there's pretty much nobody else but Kenny Galladay, who is awesome, to throw the ball to. So I thought Riddick could be a guy who might be relevant, frankly, in half PPR leagues, even as a flex. But I'm wondering, how do you see the backfield breaking down, assuming that Kerryon Johnson's out a couple of weeks? Is it going to be just basically Blunt's going to step into Kerryon Johnson's role and Riddick's going to maintain his little pass-catching ways?
Well, Blunt can't step into that role because he can't really catch passes. So for me, I think they're going to mix in Zach Zenner. I think Zenner's going to come up. He's going to get some playing time. Blunt is going to have a bit of an extended role, even though it won't matter against the Bears. They just played them, you know, last week, so it's these teams are very familiar with each other. The Bears' run defense has been legit all year, but Theo Riddick did a total 6 catches for 60 yards against them. I think they're more than okay letting Theo Riddick catch the underneath passes and kind of letting that play out as it will. So Riddick inside the dome in Detroit, a guy that's going to see, you know, at least 6 targets, maybe upwards of 10 plus. I think Theo Riddick is going to be like on the high floor RB3 radar, especially in PPR leagues. So yeah, I definitely think he's worth a pickup. I thought he was worth a pickup before this week, too.
Right. That's kind of where I was going with that, is that even before this, it felt like he was worth a pickup because he has been so involved in the passing game. So that's good. Again, Kenny Galladay is awesome, but I'm not really sure if there's anything we need to say about that. The fact is, he's got 14 targets, 8 catches, 113 yards, mm-hmm. and a touchdown. I mean, he is what tags a mid-tier wide receiver, too?
Yeah, I have him right at 18 right now, actually, behind Juju Smith-Schuster and Josh Gordon. It's like he's right in that territory. So he's an every week play. You put him in there, especially with Marvin Jones out. People were worried, oh, is he going to receive more attention? I wasn't really worried about it. I was just wanted the targets because Galladay is making some crazy catches, and he did it again today multiple times on James Bradbury. Like, the touchdown catch was phenomenal. I don't know how he held onto that ball, but it was a great catch. He made another sideline grab that I saw that was it was a great play. So I have no concerns about Galladay. You take the volume and you play him every week.
Yep, absolutely. I wouldn't be concerned about the matchup, but his schedule, you know, he's got the Bears, then the Rams and the Cardinals. So it's really not that concerning, at least in the short term. But regardless, I think he's pretty matchup proof. Mm-hmm. On the Panthers side of the ball, I mean, DJ Moore has the monstrous game, 8 targets, 7 catches, 157 yards and a touchdown. Now, I think I know what your answer is to this. But who would you rather own going forward, DJ Moore or Devin Funchess?
It's Moore.
Oh, I did not know the answer. Frankly, I thought you were going to be like, it's still Funchess because of, you know, whatever. But So you're going Moore right now. So where do you have him? Would you say roughly? I mean, I know you do your updated rest of season rankings on the fly pretty much, but where do you have him roughly going forward?
So I moved Moore up to 36. I dropped Funchess to 40. So they're both in a similar tier, I would say. But Moore is like, you're seeing him involved more and more every single week. They've been developing plays for him. He's fantastic after the catch, which is good because Cam Newton struggles with accuracy. I don't think this is a secret. I think people know this. And the reason that they actually lost the game here was because Cam Newton, if you missed the end of that game, you got to see it because Cam Newton dropped back and he legit had over 5 seconds to stand there. There was literally no pressure on him. He had Jarius Wright standing there across the middle of the field. There wasn't anybody within 3 yards of him. He threw it over his head by a couple yards, behind him a couple yards, and it was just, that was how they lost the game because Ron Rivera decided to go for 2 instead of taking the tie with the extra point because their kicker had missed an extra point and a field goal in the game. So, I mean, I don't know if I can fault it. It is what it is. Cam Newton had a solid day when you look at it on paper, but the Lions, I've been saying this all along, the Lions are like a defense that people think are better than they are. They're a team that if you throw the ball against them, if you like rack up some attempts, you're going to put up a lot of points because their efficiency numbers are so far down across the board. That's why you saw Newton pick up as much as he did today. DJ Moore did a ton after the catch, which is what he's been doing all year. The matchup was fantastic because you knew Darius Slay was probably going to be on Devin Funchess most of the day. And that's why I like Moore a little bit more, just because he's the guy who's not going to draw that top tier cornerback because they're not going to stick like their second tier guy on Devin Funchess, who's probably the best red zone target, even though he let one go right off of his chest today. He's struggled with some drops recently. So I just think this team is going to mix it up quite a bit. Like, you know, like I don't think you're going to be able to rely on any of these guys week over week. You kind of play the matchups. And the reason I like Moore the most is because I think he comes with the most upside, as he demonstrated today.
Man, you ruined my whole shtick there, Tags. I was really annoyed because I was sure that you would be like, well, you know, it's close, but I'm going to have Funchess ahead. I agree. I have Moore ahead going forward. Funchess is not playing well. He is really struggling with mm-hmm. the drops. Now, he did get the targets today, but part of what I was thinking coming in is that he really has not been seeing that many targets with Olsen healthy. His last 4 games now, he has 27, 44, 32, and 39 yards. I just don't really, at this point, if you're still in it at this point, you're going to need to have some more upside than Funchess is essentially bringing you. So I agree, DJ Moore. Now, I do think that he is going to certainly give you duds, not full on duds, but I think he's in that mold of the wide receiver threes that we're talking about, which are he's going to have some big games. He's going to have some games that are really going to frustrate you. But as a whole, I would rather own somebody like that than Devin Funchess, who just doesn't present the upside. Anything else from the Panther side of the ball, buddy?
Not really. I mean, McCaffrey, the game was, I mean, he's going to receive all the touches for that backfield. We kind of know that by now. There's nothing else. Like, that's my concern about this whole Panthers team. I do think Cam Newton's an awesome buy. His schedule down the stretch is really good. But that's the difficulty with the rest of the team, like the McCaffreys, the Moores, the Funcheses, the Olsons, you know, even Curtis Samuel to an extent, that there's so many options in this offense. They can go so many different ways. And it's kind of like a guessing game week over week. So it's a little disappointing to see Cam with 2 rushing yards this week, but I think they get back to the basics if his ankle's okay, because he got rolled up on today. But yeah.
Cam, he did. He only missed a play, I believe. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, I'm going to be fully honest, I did not know who the Panthers backup quarterback was. I saw that guy come in. I was like, oh, all right. I did not know you. But speaking of their schedule tags, you're absolutely right. And that's kind of what you need to be looking at this point, especially if you're already playoff bound. They draw the Seahawks, the Bucks, the Browns, the Saints, and the Falcons going forward. That's a pretty good schedule for someone like Cam. So certainly if people are worried about him, so long as his ankle checks out, which it should, he came right back in and he played the rest of the game. He's certainly a buy. Colts 38, Titans 10. Now, there's actually a lot to talk about here for a game that was pretty much over right from the get-go. I do want to just mention this, you know, I'm sure the Colts would have won easily regardless, but it is worth noting that Titans defensive coordinator Dean Pease had some sort of medical issue right before the game started and was taken to the hospital. So I'm sure that shook up the defense a little bit. That's not taking anything away from Andrew Luck, who is remarkable. But I did want to point that out. Marcus Mariota re-injured his elbow. You mentioned it earlier. Do we know the severity of this yet, Tags? I assume it was, it's his throwing elbow, but I mean, it was a nerve issue or whatever the first time. I assume it's something similar to that, or do we not know any details yet?
I haven't heard any details on this. Like, honestly, like it was really weird surrounding the whole entire thing. And like Colts were getting pressure on him. He was sacked 4 times, while dropping back. I think it was 17 dropbacks, and he was sacked 4 times before getting hurt and leaving the game. And which is weird because the Colts haven't been able to generate any pressure up front as of late. Like, I think they had like 1 sack over their last 3 games or something like that. So it's really weird. This Titans offensive line has been really hit or miss all year. And I figured today would have been a game where Mariota would have had more time to pass, but he really didn't. So I don't know. It might be better off for fantasy owners, because you don't ever have to wonder if Mariota is going to be like a starter again, that you just kind of like avoid the entire situation.
Yeah, so is that what you would do, assuming that Blaine Gabbert is a starter going forward? And again, we're just guessing here. We have no idea how bad his injury is. But if he is, you're never starting Corey Davis? You're not starting the running backs? Anything like that?
It's really difficult to recommend Corey Davis after a game like this, where it's like this game script like favored the passing game, obviously. It was a game where they could have thrown the ball a lot. Indianapolis doesn't have a shutdown corner. Corey Davis totaled 4 targets. I don't know, man. Like, Blaine Gabbert hasn't done anything. And Blaine Gabbert's the type of guy that comes in relief and then he does well and then he gets worse as time goes on. It's kind of like the Brock Osweiler trend that you notice in their performances. Like, they do well and then all of a sudden it's like they turn back into the player that we always knew that they were. And I don't think that he can support a top 36 wide receiver every single week. So Corey Davis is currently dropping down my board, where he's just outside the top 30. And I'm really not excited unless I hear some good news about Mariota. This is frustrating, man.
I think it's fair to say. I mean, the bottom line is the offense didn't look good with Mariota in there. He didn't leave right off the get-go. I mean, I think it was close to halftime by the time he was out of the game. And, you know, Corey Davis really wasn't doing anything at that point either. It's funny because I feel like I've been so anti-Corey Davis, not the player. I think the talent is remarkable. Mm-hmm. But in terms of fantasy performance this year on this podcast, I've constantly just been like, I'm avoiding. And then I got totally sucked in last game. And then to see this is really frustrating. Again, if Blaine Gabbert is there, it's a different story. But let me ask you something. Let's assume that Mariota is okay and he plays next week. Let's switch gears. Are you at all thinking about this running game? Because Derrick Henry, again, for the second straight game, looked much more effective than Deion Lewis. And I get the game was pretty much over. Lewis still got 10 carries. Derrick Henry got 9. But Derrick Henry had 9 for 46. Lewis had 10 for 24. Is there anything to think about in terms of the running game, or is it still, no, it's Deion Lewis is the one you want to own and Derrick Henry is pretty much an afterthought?
Yeah, Deion Lewis is still the one I want to own here. I'm not excited about either of them, especially if Gabbert is going forward as the starter. Like, I just don't know how to approach this here. They have a matchup with Houston in Houston next week. I don't think that that's a good matchup where you'd want to play Derrick Henry, because they just don't allow much on the ground, despite Adrian Peterson scoring 2 touchdowns today. They had only allowed 3 coming into the day. And then 2 weeks after that, they play Jacksonville. And then Washington in championship week. So, I mean, Jacksonville, the first week of the playoffs, that's going to be brutal for Corey Davis. It's going to be brutal for everybody on that team. Just because Jacksonville, while they haven't been, you know, the elite defense that everybody, you know, thought they drafted, they're still an above average matchup. And I think we saw that in James Conner's performance this week, Marlon Mack last week. So, yeah, it's a situation where ideally you tie yourself to running backs who are part of high scoring offenses, because even if they bust, you have a good shot at a touchdown. But this offense is just bad. It's a timeshare. So Deion Lewis dropped down in my rankings, and Derrick Henry stayed where he always has because I had him down like around number 40 running back.
Yeah, no, I haven't done my rest of season rankings yet, but I'm inclined to agree. Again, it's a little tough to do it right now with the injury, but either way, I do think that Lewis is probably dropping down. On the other side of the ball, it's all gravy. Andrew Luck extends his two ridiculous streak. He has now thrown three or more touchdowns in seven straight games, mm-hmm. and he has not been sacked in, I think it is up to 218 straight dropbacks. I may have that number wrong, but I mean, it's really nice. It's nice that the Colts finally invested in the offensive line, but let's start where I think everybody wants to know. Why tags have you been recommending Eric Ebron all season and not Jack Doyle? Eric Ebron, zero targets. Jack Doyle, four targets, four catches, 43 yards. Again, this is just basically, even last week, Doyle played 48 out of 55 snaps. Eric Ebron played just 21 snaps. I mean, Ebron will be involved in the goal line. He didn't get anything today. But again, Jack Doyle is the one to own here, correct?
Yup. I did like a big, like my intro to the primer this week was basically just on Eric Doyle and Jack, or on Jack Doyle and Eric Ebron, because like I was on full tilt last week. And then when I saw Eric Ebron be handed a ball on like a reverse this week and then throw the ball to Andrew Luck in the end zone, I'm like, if he catches this, this will be the end of me. It will end my fantasy season.
He made a heck of an effort on that catch, by the way, right? He really did. I mean, Ebron, honestly, got to work on your QB skills. you know, you had him on that play. But we've talked about this a lot. We know exactly how we feel. I'm sure most fantasy analysts feel the same way. And it was nice, at least, to see that Eric Ebron's production kind of finally made sense in terms of his snap count, at least. Other than that, Marlon Mack scores the touchdown, doesn't run all that well overall. Jordan Wilkins actually finds the end zone as well. T.Y. Hilton has a monster game. The two touchdowns, nine catches on nine targets, mm-hmm. 155 yards. Anything else you want to say here on the Colts side of the ball?
Yeah, Adoree Jackson, after shutting down Josh Gordon, he had no prayer against T.Y. Hilton. He just outran him every single play. Like, Adoree Jackson's back was to it, and he just had his hand basically tailing T.Y. Hilton, like hoping that the pass would be underthrown and that his hand would just be in the right spot. And never was.
Yeah.
The ball, Andrew Luck is just throwing the ball so well right now. Like, the guy is, he's playing lights out football, man. And like you said it, the three or more touchdowns in seven straight games, that's the third longest streak in NFL history behind just Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. So he's doing some work, man. The game plans have been fantastic. My real question here is, I can't wait to go through and look at the snap counts, because I want to see if Dontrell Inman outsnapped Ryan Grant. He didn't last week, but he saw more targets. This week, again, he saw more targets. He scored a touchdown. Dontrell Inman's been very efficient in his play with Andrew Luck, and I think that he has earned the right to play more going forward. I'm curious to see the snap counts after this game, because he did see six targets in the game, so that's definitely promising.
Yeah, he does catch a touchdown, four catches overall, 34 yards, so a nice game for him. And yeah, again, we don't always have access to all the numbers at this point, but I'm sure you and Bobby will talk about it this week. Before we go forward, Tags, I do want to talk about another sponsor of today's show, Lisa Mattress. As you can probably hear, I am still a little under the weather, despite being sick on last week's podcast. So I am thankful that I own a Lisa Mattress so that I can get a good night's sleep tonight. Good night's sleep is really important, guys. You should know this already. It helps you recover from distractions faster. It prevents burnouts. It helps you make better decisions. It improves your memory and overall helps you make fewer mistakes. Now, to design a better mattress, Lisa leveraged 30 plus years of experience and hundreds of hours of testing to develop the perfect mattress for all body shapes and sleeping styles. Now, look, I've mentioned this before. It's an incredibly comfortable mattress, but we're just really proud to have Lisa as a sponsor, because Lisa's mission is to provide a better night's sleep for everybody. They have this thing called the 110 program, where they donate one mattress for every 10 they sell. That's more than 26,000 mattresses and counting. And while the mattress donations are awesome, that's not all Lisa does. Together with the Arbor Day Foundation, Lisa plants one tree for every mattress they sell, and they're committed to planting 1 million trees by 2025. And with our offer code, you can get $160 off a Lisa mattress. Just go to lisa.com/fantasypros. That's LEESA.com/fantasypros. All right, Tags, Giants 38, Bucks 35. Fitzpatrick was benched. Jameis Winston brought in. Now, let's talk about this for a second, because you mentioned it, I think, this week on the podcast. We've been thinking about it. If Winston suffers an injury that would cost him any time in 2019, then his $20.92 million salary becomes fully guaranteed, right? So that was something that kind of we were thinking about it. Would they just ride Fitzpatrick going forward? But considering he came in this week, are we expecting Winston to start next week against the 49ers?
I do. I'm expecting him to start. And I've been saying, because I don't know if Dirk Cutter makes it through the week. You know, we keep saying this. I don't know if the Bucs are just going to wait till the end of the season to let him go or whatever. But Jameis Winston gave them no reason to not go back to him this next week. Like, he played a lot better than Fitzpatrick did. And the thing is like, Jameis Winston, the game he got benched, like, he had a very bad game. I mean, if you've watched Jameis Winston over the last couple of years, you have to understand he's going to have very bad games. Like, he is that gunslinger quarterback. Like, he has zero F's given. Like, he just legitimately will sling the ball around the field. He's not scared of a tight window. He's not scared of trying to get a ball over a linebacker, and sometimes the ball will sail on him. Sometimes it makes him look really good, and other times it makes him look really bad. I think he needs a better mentor, Jameis Winston does, in terms of someone to, like, to reel him back in and tell him to understand, to know when to take your chances. I just think he's still too young. But the reason I think the Bucs go forward with him, I think they understand that their season is out of line. Dirk Cutter is no longer coaching for his job, and I'm sure that the Bucs will make it clear to him, knowing that we have to find out the talent we have on our roster, because we have to evaluate it going into 2019 draft. And that's why Ronald Jones, when he comes back, I expect him to play a lot more. I expect Jameis Winston to go forward, because they have to figure out if he is, in fact, their solution at quarterback. I'm not saying that they can figure that out over the final 6 weeks of the season, but they have to have a better answer, because Ryan Fitzpatrick is clearly not the guy. Jameis Winston might give them a discount. Like, they could restructure his contract at the end of the year, basically to say, hey, look, you had some things that were off the record that, you know, it's obviously damaging to your free agent status if we let you hit free agency, but we want to work something out with you. I do think that these two teams end up married, like, him and the Bucs are married to each other. I think he will be there. So I just think it's a team that needs to look forward going, like, at the roster. I think Chris Godwin needs to play more over DeSean Jackson, and, you know, OJ Howard has been playing over Cameron Brate. But this team just has to admit defeat, say that they're out of it this year, and we have to see the talent we have on the roster.
So that's that does lead into another question. So, I mean, again, I totally buy everything you're saying. I'm surprised, essentially, that it would take this long to sort of make that switch, to the mm-hmm. extent that Dirk Cutter's job could ever be saved over the last few weeks or anything like that. But let me ask Peyton Barber. He ran well today. 18 carries, 106 yards, and a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Now, you had him at 43rd rest of season, but it sounds like, frankly, you're probably not going to be moving him up all that much, because you're assuming that when Ronald Jones gets back, and I don't think that's too far away, that he's just going to take over then, so that they can see what they have. Is that fair?
Yeah, this was not surprising to me to see Peyton Barber have a good game. The Giants, once they traded away Damon Harrison, they were going to be terrible against the run, and it's shown. They've allowed three straight 100-yard rushers, and it was Adrian Peterson, who was missing three offensive linemen, and then Matt Breida, who, I mean, he hadn't totaled a 100-yard game in quite a long time, and he looked like he was just like one of the best players in the league against the Giants. So this team is just really struggling against the run. I had Peyton Barber as a top 25 running back this week, so I expected I didn't expect this big of a performance, I'm being honest, but I did expect him to, like, total at least 80 yards in this game. Didn't know if he'd have a shot at a touchdown or not, but he's not the solution. And if your team is out of it, like, what are you doing playing Peyton Barber? He's just a guy.
Yeah, no, he's certainly not the future at running back. So hopefully when Ronald Jones gets back, he will play more and we can see what we have in him. In terms of Howard, I do just want to note that he did leave this game with an ankle injury towards the end. I don't know, Tags, if you've heard about anything about the severity of that.
I didn't even know he did. That's that's good to know.
Yeah, he left at the end of the game, and he was questionable at first, but he just didn't come back, which was a little troublesome because it was a close game. So you figured if it was really nothing, that they would have brought him back. If he does, if he is unable to play next week, I assume Cameron Brate against the 49ers makes a good pickup for you, right, buddy?
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, Cameron Brate for sure. Like, that's the thing. Jameis Winston is kind of like an Andrew Luck thing where they target the tight ends an awful lot, no matter who's calling plays, no matter what. And if you combined Howard and Brate as one, you'd play him every week as a tight end one, like every single week. So, yeah, for sure. Brate would definitely be in my top 12 tight ends for the rest of the season. If OJ Howard was out for, like, extended period of time, like if it's a high ankle sprain or something, that he's going to be out for like 2 to 4 weeks, I'd say Cameron Brate is like a top 12 tight end going forward.
Yeah, and again, no idea on the severity of it. I do know just that he was out. He was originally questionable, and then they said that he would not return. So let's hope it's minor. By the time you're listening to this, you probably know what it is. On the Giants side of the ball, we had really an underrated storyline here, Tags. We had the Giants offensive line versus the Bucks pass rush, which was like the irresistible force meets the immovable object. And the Bucks, because they get no pressure on the quarterback, they do get four sacks. So whatever the Giants line was, the Giants offensive line was in that little analogy, they win because they cannot stop anybody. I believe Eli Manning completed his first 11 pass attempts before his lone incompletion on the day, 17 of 18 for 231 yards and two touchdowns. Tags, I'm not really sure there's all that much to take away from this game. Odell Beckham is really good and Saquon Barkley is really, really good. Is there anything else you want to talk about here?
No, it was really, I mean, that's the thing. I got a lot of questions on, you know, Evan Engram, Sterling Shepard in the chat this morning on the live stream. And I said that the Giants, my only concern with guys like Evan Engram, Sterling Shepard was that there were so many different avenues for the Giants to take to beat the Bucs in this game on offense. And, you know, we knew Barkley would be involved because he always is. The guy's like putting up 100 yards every single week. He's scoring touchdowns like on demand. He scores three of them today. Odell Beckham always probably going to get his, like he only saw four targets, but he managed to turn him into 74 yards and a touchdown, added another carry for 11 yards. So he got enough. But the thing is Engram and Shepard just, they only saw two targets apiece. So that's the I wouldn't be too down on those guys because obviously it's not going to be very often where Eli Manning throws 18 passes. So I wouldn't be overly concerned. It was a game where this could have always happened. So I'm not really too shocked.
Yeah, I mean, their upcoming schedule isn't that favorable. The Eagles, Bears, Redskins, Titans, Colts. But, you know, whatever. To me, Engram, Sterling Shepard falls into that mold of guys that we've talked about a lot. And Engram, even in this game, I mean, he really had just one really long catch to kind of save his day. So he's not a guy who I particularly love going forward. Texans 23, Redskins 21. Alex Smith breaks both his tibia and his fibula, and he's done for the year. He's probably in surgery right now. Colt McCoy comes in 6 of 12 for 54 yards and a touchdown, plus 5 carries for 35 yards. All right, so Smith is done for the year. What effect, if any, do you think that this has on the Redskins' offense?
It's got to be negative. I know that people were down on Alex Smith, and so many people, it's the easiest thing in the world to rag on Alex Smith before his injury that he suffered here. And, I mean, I don't know what you expected from Alex Smith. Like, seriously, have you looked at the pass receivers the receivers he has in this offense? Jordan Reed still working through multiple injuries. Josh Doctson can't gain any separation. Paul Richardson was playing through injuries. Wasn't a number one receiver that they paid as one. Jamison Crowder's been out all season. Chris Thompson's been in and out of the lineup. They're down three starting offensive linemen. Do I need to go on anymore here? Like, I don't know what people expected out of Alex Smith with the surrounding cast. Do you think that Kirk Cousins would have been great in this offense with the surrounding cast? Because I don't. That's the thing. Like, I'm going to stand up for Alex Smith here. I'm not going to say that he's been great because he hasn't. He hasn't played well. But I don't expect many quarterbacks in this situation to play well. So going down, do I think Colt McCoy is going to walk in and do well in that scenario? I do not. I think it's going to hurt Adrian Peterson a little bit just because, as I mentioned, the offensive linemen, they have two starting guards on IR. They're probably going to be missing Trent Williams again against Dallas on Thanksgiving. It's just a bad team. Like, their defense is the only reason that they've hung in there this long. Their offense has played like a ball control style offense, but I just don't think Peterson's going to be able to carry this team much more at his age and with Colt McCoy a quarterback. There's no threats in this team that you have to worry about.
Yeah, good for him, frankly, for finding the end zone twice in this one. He doesn't, have a particularly good yards per carry or anything like that, but he does find the end zone twice. It was nice to see Jordan Reed finally make something of the targets. 11 targets, 7 catches, 71 yards and a touchdown. Now, the Texans have struggled against tight ends, but you have to assume at some point that this is going to become more of a regular thing, even with McCoy, don't you? I mean, I don't know where you had Reed ranked rest of season. I dropped him at this point, I think out maybe at the low end of tight end one range at this point, or maybe outside that, frankly. But at this point, what are you thinking about him going forward, even with McCoy?
I had him at tight end 11 coming into this week. I wasn't totally like off Jordan Reed because I felt like, you know, like even though he'd been as bad as he had, the targets are there and you kind of have to follow those targets. And he's still been like 30, 40, 50 yards a game. So it kind of was what it was. And then to find out that he's still playing through some injuries and that him and Alex Smith were working on the chemistry between the two because they hadn't really been Reed in stretching the field. There's like a lot of reasons here why I think Reed has struggled, but going to Colt McCoy, do I think it helps? Probably not. But I can't imagine it would hurt either because like Smith and Reed just weren't on the same page. So yeah. this was a matchup I expected Reed to do pretty well because he wasn't going to be kept in a block. Houston, with his shorter average depth of target, it suited well for the pass rush that Houston was going to bring. There were some reasons that led me to believe that Reed would have a solid game here, but I don't think like he's a must play every week, but I also don't think that it's likely you're going to find someone on your waiver wire who is guaranteed as much work as he is. So he's still in the tight end one conversation, and I honestly might move him up after this week though, because like I said, him and Alex Smith just weren't on the same page.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I had dropped him pretty far down, frankly. I did have him outside of tight end one range. I'll probably have him as a borderline at this point. I think this is a good sign. I don't really know if I'm going to be ready to rely on him going forward, but frankly, outside of the top couple of tight ends, you really can't rely on anyone on a regular basis. On the other side of the ball, frankly, the thing that stuck out to me here for the Texans was Kiki QT. He was a game time decision coming in with a hamstring injury. Saw 9 targets in this game, 5 catches, 77 yards. Look, with Will Fuller out for the year, Texans need another threat. Demaryius Thomas saw just 1 target, no catches. I mean, can QT be someone who can fit into that wide receiver 3 mold and be a guy that fantasy owners will start more weeks than not?
Yeah, for sure. I do believe that. I believe that he's becoming that safety blanket over the middle of the field. And if the thing is, if you looked at and watched like last year, Bruce Ellington, he was someone that actually was racking up more targets than Will Fuller down the stretch. Like Bruce Ellington had a lot of targets in this offense last year, and people kind of overlook that. So with QT playing that role, I'm curious. I'm going to go back and look at his next gen stats from this game to see what his average depth of target was, because this was a game I did not watch too much of. But I was curious to see how they're going to use QT. So this is what I'll be watching tomorrow on the Game Pass and kind of taking a look at his average at the target if they were using him on field stretching roles, because Demaryius Thomas might be used as a decoy underneath. DeAndre Hopkins is what he is. He's going to draw number one coverage. He's going to see a safety over the top a lot. So if they're going to use QT in a field stretching manner, which he did have a 40-yard catch in this game, I'll definitely be high on him going forward. And I feel like he's in that wide receiver 3, wide receiver 4 conversation most weeks.
Do you think Demaryius Thomas can be droppable?
I don't know if I drop him after the one game, but I do think that I actually think I move QT above him in my rest of the season rankings, because like Demaryius, he's an older guy. He's not in the prime of his career. He's going to a new team. He's working with a new quarterback, learning a new playbook, and he's clearly not the number one option on his team. That's why I was worried about Golden Tate. The reason I liked Amari Cooper a little bit more than those guys going to Dallas was because he went there to be the clear-cut number one. Like there's nobody on that team that's going to get more targets than him on a weekly basis. And that's why you kind of have to follow that. But as for Thomas, you have two guys in this team that are probably better at this point in their career.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine if you want to hold Demaryius Thomas, but I have a feeling when I finish my rest of season rankings, which I'll start updating tomorrow, that he's going to be on the outside looking in terms of somebody, you know, and it's kind of like he's going to be a Derrick Henry type of guy for me, at least before most recently, where I've always said, you want to hold Derrick Henry because you're like, you know, if I'm in a really deep league or there's just nothing available on the waiver wire, maybe I could start him in a pinch. Okay, I'm fine with that. But if you want to cut him for anybody, especially we talked about it with the whole DJ Moore and Devin Funchess thing, need some upside at this point. I'm really not sure Demaryius Thomas has any upside. Yeah. So I'd be fine cutting him and moving on if you need to. And I agree. I think QT of the two receivers is certainly the one that you'd want to own there. Steelers 20, Jaguars 16. I mean, devastating. Mm-hmm. We talked about it a bit. Devastating 6 straight loss for the Jaguars. Who are up 16-0 in this game, and a huge 6th win in a row for the Steelers. Why don't you just, I didn't really see too much that you could honestly just take away from here, so why don't you just give me your thoughts either side of the ball, buddy. The world is your oyster.
Well, I mean, that Blake Bortles is not an NFL quarterback anymore. It basically, if his defense allows more than, you know, 20 points, then they're going to lose because he can't do anything, like legit nothing. He's throwing sidearm on a lot of his throws now. Before, it was like it seemed like he would do it sometimes just to fit a ball in a tight window, but it seems like he's doing it on almost every pass now, and it's just ugly. He's throwing the ball too hard again. Like, it's going back to like early Blake Bortles' career where he's regressing. He's lost all confidence. This team is just going to run the ball over and over. They had 43 rushing attempts today as a team. They ran the ball well against Pittsburgh. They really did. And that's the thing, is just I can't explain what happened in this game to you. Like, it just comes down to Blake Bortles not doing enough. Like I knew that the running game would be carrying this team, but you still need your quarterback to make pivotal plays in the game. Like, and he just couldn't do it. It was like 3 and out, 3 and out, 3 and out the last 4 possessions of the game. I watched this entire game, and Blake Bortles is just, he's not suited to be an NFL quarterback. And he's costing the Jags a lot. And the thing is, I don't think this defense is bad. I really don't at all. I think they're still an elite defense. I just think that they've been on the field for too long. I feel like that they're upset because they have to carry the team. If they don't hold the other team scoreless, which they did for the first 3 quarters of the game, I believe, and maybe they did score in the third quarter. It was towards the end of the third quarter, but they held them scoreless for the majority of this game, and they knew that the game was always going to be within, you know, distance for the Steelers, and it just allowing 20 points to the Steelers is not a bad thing. So I'm tired of the Blake Bortles show, and unfortunately Jacksonville, they wasted 2 years of elite production from this defense by going with Blake Bortles.
Yeah, Bortles, I mean, the numbers are really kind of stark.
He was terrible. He was 10
of 18 for 104 yards. It always boggles my mind. And, you know, I shouldn't say this. I'm not a particularly athletic person myself, but it's so bizarre that guys literally, their entire life has been about throwing a football. And he looks like half the time he has no idea how he should feel or look when he throws a football, which is just mind-boggling to me. Mm-hmm. I agree. You're looking at him. Yeah, he's kind of throwing sidearm. He just looks incredibly uncomfortable throwing a football, which is something he has done his entire life. So I agree. And the defense, yeah, let's make sure we point that out. The defense played awesome for the first three quarters. And even the first touchdown for the Steelers, I don't know if it was a broken play by the defense with the long Antonio Brown touchdown or whether or not it was just Ben extending it.
Yeah, it was
long.
A zone coverage. Jalen Ramsey wasn't really in coverage on that play. And I know that you saw him as the closest defender, like chasing after AB. But if you saw the whole play on like an all 22 access, you'll see that it was a zone coverage. Jalen Ramsey was actually on the other side of the field from where Antonio Brown caught that ball, but he chased him. So the effort was there by Jalen Ramsey. That's not on Ramsey at all.
Yeah, Ramsey actually, from what I saw, played very well in this
awesome game.
Yeah, he really rebounded from last week and sounded like he took ownership of the poor game and his mental mistakes and everything like that. But I agree with you. I feel bad for the defense. As somebody who rooted for a team once with a terrible quarterback and a dominant defense, I remember that it's pretty frustrating when the defense has to watch the quarterback kind of give it away. Ravens 24, Bengals 21. Look, Lamar Jackson, 27 carries for 117 yards. I believe that's the most carries for a QB in an NFL game since 1950 is a stat.
Wow.
I saw he does nothing through the air, 13 of 19 for 150 yards and an interception. Now, again, we mentioned it. John Harbaugh sounds pessimistic about Flacco's availability against the Raiders, but okay, let's start here. Where do you guess, I'm not going to hold it to it, but where do you guess he'll have Lamar Jackson ranked as a QB next week against the Raiders, assuming he starts?
It's another good matchup, but the Bengals were a really good matchup. Now, granted, it was a divisional game, but they had, you know, the 2 weeks to prepare for this game because Flacco, I think they always knew that he was going to be out. So I don't know what to expect, man. The Raiders defense is terrible. So I do believe that Lamar Jackson should have a better passing game because if there's one area of the Bengals that's not terrible, it's their back end of their safety play and their cornerback play. But their linebackers, their entire front seven is garbage. The linebackers, they were missing so many linebackers in this game. The linebackers they did have on the field weren't playing very well. But it's tough for me, man. I'll probably have him as a top 15 quarterback play, knowing that he ran for 117 yards. I think they dial that back, though. I don't think they want him to run the ball 27. That guy's not going to hold up.
No, there's no way. But is it fair to say that so long as Jackson is the starting quarterback for the Ravens, you can't start any Ravens pass catcher? Is that fair?
That is probably fair, yeah. I mean, he had no touchdowns today. He actually, I know he had one interception, but there was another play that he should have been picked off on. So not very good passing. I think we knew that when he came into the league, though. So I wasn't expecting too much of him through the air, but against this team, I'm let down for sure. And yeah, definitely John Brown, Michael Crabtree, those guys get knocked down for whatever reason. Willie Snead saw 8 targets, so
yeah,
he maintains
the same
floor.
It's like nothing changed, right? Nothing changed with Willie Snead. He was like, whatever, it doesn't matter to me. He's throwing the ball. I'm going to do my exact same line every week.
Yep, and Gus Edwards, like that, obviously, we talked about that at the beginning of the show, and I do think that he's worthy of waiver wire pickup, and you know that's something we will be discussing on the podcast tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will leave it to you. The Bengals side of the ball. Look, AJ Green is out of this game, but apparently tags again. You especially have been basically saying you think he's going to be out for the season. But there's apparently optimism at this point that he's going to return next week against the Bears. And I assume if he does, he's clearly a must play. But I assume that you think that would probably open things up for everyone on this offense. Is that fair?
I don't know, man. I mean, so they're supposed to be playing at home against the Browns this week.
Correct.
I don't know. Like, this is a team that I believe are out of the playoff race. I mean, I know they're not out technically.
Yeah, so I didn't realize, by the way. I mean, I knew that they were sort of in the mix. I didn't realize that they actually came into this game owning the sixth seed.
Yeah,
I was surprised.
It's kind of stupid. They're 5-5, and they're not a team that should be 5-5. But so they might push Green to come back, but I don't know if he's going to be extremely efficient when he does return. We've seen wide receivers play through foot injuries before, and it hasn't been very successful. You know, we've seen Julio Jones, we've seen Dez Bryant, Sammy Watkins, like these guys, like Greg Olsen, tried to come back last year with a foot injury, wasn't very effective. it's just pass catchers. It, you know, Jordan Reed last year, you know, like I can go on and on. Julian Edelman, like there's a lot of players that struggle playing through foot injuries. So, I mean, they might put him, like, have him come back. It's definitely something that could re-aggravate it. And then, like, if they lose, they decide to shut him down because they're out of the playoff race. But knowing that they're still in it, I'm not putting anything past the Bengals. They're probably going to put him back out there.
Yeah, that's fair. And John Ross finds the end zone again. But
great catch.
Great catch. But just to, I assume John Ross is not somebody who you're particularly interested in fantasy.
This league was a brutal matchup. I don't know if I have a problem starting against the Browns next week, actually. Like, I'm not saying he's going to be like a top 36 ranked wide receiver, but the Browns have a lot of big plays over the top. Their safety play has been mediocre at best. They've had a lot of injuries in that secondary. So if AJ Green comes back, I think it does John Ross actually a lot of good. I think it also does Tyler Boyd good. Like, just having AJ Green there as a presence will demand Denzel Ward in coverage, which is great things for Boyd and Ross.
Yeah, again, I think AJ Green being there just opens up the offense. I actually thought that the Bengals played better. Andy Dalton in particular played better than I expected them to.
Oh, yeah, in this matchup, yeah.
Yeah, it was a tough game, and they hung in there. But again, Boyd, yeah, I think the 11 targets, 4 catches, 71 yards, that's the type of thing that happens when AJ Green is there because he's getting so much attention. They even talked about it on the broadcast, frankly, how John Harbaugh basically said they're essentially treating Tyler Boyd as if he is AJ Green because mm-hmm. he's essentially the only legitimate pass catcher. So I think that's kind of how teams look at that when Green is out. And if he does return next week, which again sounds optimistic right now, I do think that it opens things up for everybody, including Joe Mixon, who had 12 carries for 14 yards on the day that he did get the touchdown, thankfully. I know I'm not going to get you started on the Mixon mm-hmm. rant. It's okay. Let's move to the late games here. These were still going on when we started. The Raiders 23 Cardinals 21. Looks like they won on the last second field goal. Way to be. I think I saw that Brandon LaFell left this game. I wasn't sure how serious it was or if he came back or not, but he does get the touchdown catch. Unfortunately, John Gruden ruins kind of the only thing that we had going for us in the Raiders offense, which is we were like, okay, great, Doug Martin's going to get the bulk of the carries. Instead, Jalen Richard sees 11 carries for 61 yards. Doug Martin sees 10 carries for 52 yards. And Washington sees 12 carries for 39 yards. So I don't really know. Is there, I mean, I guess, again, it's basically the only question I ask every week. I guess Martin, although today makes it a little dicey, but is there anybody on the Raiders side of the ball that you want to own for fantasy purposes?
Not really. Because Doug Martin, he's not going to be involved in games that they fall behind. And I think that we're going to see that happen more often than you like most teams. And the thing is, it was against Arizona today. Am I shocked that they won? Yeah, I actually thought Arizona would win this game at home against a Raiders team that looks like they had kind of given up. But after that, I mean, Doug Martin, he's going to be playing at Baltimore next week. They're going to play Kansas City in week 13. You know that they're not going to be just running the ball throughout that game. Then they play Pittsburgh in week 14. Again, a team that's going to put up points on them. And then they get the Bengals and the Broncos in weeks 15 and 16. So, I mean, I'm not going to go out of my way to get Doug Martin. If you have him on your roster, he's a floor play. Like today, the performance he had today is pretty much what you can expect going forward.
Yeah. So if you're in really dire straits and you just need some guaranteed kind of mediocre points, then fine. But other than that, you can pretty much move on.
He's like a slightly improved Frank Gore. I think that's what I can say.
Okay. I like that. I'll buy that. Slightly improved Frank Gore. That's how we're going to refer to
Doug
Martin.
Yes.
For fantasy, of course. Of course. Don't insult the great man who's going to be running in 10 years when you and I are retired from this game. On the Cardinals side of the ball, David Johnson just continues to eat since Byron. Now, it was a great matchup. Of course, 25 carries, 137 yards. He does see just 3 targets, 1 catch for 17 yards in this game. So that part of it wasn't great. But of course, the production is what we're really looking for. Larry Fitzgerald, only 2 catches, only 23 yards, but 2 touchdowns. The most interesting thing might be Christian Kirk, who saw 4 targets, 3 catches, 77 yards and a touchdown. But I'll let you, what do you think is the most interesting part of this game from the Arizona side of the ball?
What's so funny is I believe, I don't know the exact wording I had on Christian Kirk inside the primer this week, but I wrote saying, I am concerned about volume in this game. Larry Fitzgerald has clearly become the number one target for Josh Rosen. He has seen at least 8 targets in each of the last 4 games, in double digits. I think it was in 3 straight games. So Kirk, you know, if the Arizona passes the ball maybe 25 times this week, which I thought was a realistic possibility, like that would be limited to 25 pass attempts, that Kirk might only see 4 targets. Can he get a big play against this Oakland defense? Yeah, he can, but it's not something you want to bank on. He's just a wide receiver 5. Of course, he sees 4 targets, spot on there. Catches 3 balls, spot on there. He gets the one big play. He scored a 59-yard touchdown, with majority of it coming after the catch. Larry Fitzgerald sees just four targets, you know, 23 yards, but he catches two touchdowns. The Cardinals throw the ball 20 times. I there was a lot I predicted right in this game, but it's just the big play and the touchdowns came through for those guys. The volume was always going to be worrisome, and Ricky Seals-Jones was the biggest disappointment to me here. Like, he was he streamed on a couple of my teams this week, and definitely a letdown. I was worried about the volume, but I figured even if he had saw four or five targets that he can get it done against Oakland. Yeah, not so much.
Yeah, no, ditto. I streamed him in a league. And again, when you're that deep at tight end and, you know, George Kittle's on a bye and stuff this week, you do what you got to do. You follow the targets. It was a great matchup. The Raiders really struggle against tight ends. It's really just about the fact that it's difficult for anyone to succeed when the guy is throwing 20 times a game, right? Yep. I mean, the Cardinals were really conservative in this game pretty much throughout. And it's fair because Josh Rosen does not look like a particularly good quarterback, at least at this stage of the game. So I think it was fair, although they did lose.
Since we're talking about the tight end position, if we were drafting today, how high would you draft Travis Kelce and Zach Ertz in drafts?
All right. Well, we had the Fantasy Pros Invitational. Is a league amongst the most accurate experts last year. And I had the first pick in that, and I drafted Kelce on the turn. And Ertz went right after that on the turn of the 2-3. So at this point, I feel like I'd probably move them both up to early on in the second round at this point in a 12-team league. So let's say around between 15 and 18. How about you?
Yeah, that's close. I mean, I'd probably say around 18 because the running backs... Definitely there's like the top eight running backs that maybe even top 10 where it's like those guys, if you can get one of those guys or two of them, you definitely want them. And then obviously you have the elite of the elite wide receivers that see 10 plus targets every single game. You have to draft those guys. But right after them, like I know some people like I would take them over Joe Mixon right now. I would take them over probably Christian McCaffrey. Yeah, that's the area of the draft where I would definitely be talking about those guys because what they're doing at that position, it just gives you an edge that you don't have to worry about it. You just plug them and play them.
No, I agree. And, not on the same level, but Kittle is certainly a guy who would go, earlier than you might expect. And then after that, you just wait forever because it doesn't really matter once it. I mean, I think there's a clear tier at this point. You can do what you want with Rob Gronkowski, but certainly the top two guys are incredible. All right, moving to the second to last game, Broncos 23, Chargers 22. I was surprised by this outcome. They went on a last second field goal. For the Broncos, Phillip Lindsay, 11 carries, 79 yards, and two touchdowns. Royce Freeman comes back, 7 carries, 23 yards, and a touchdown. Cortland Sutton leads the passing game, 3 catches on 6 targets for 78 yards. What do you want to say about the Broncos side of the ball?
That Phillip Lindsay continues to impress, man. The guy's out there running like I think they called him the Tasmanian Devil on the broadcast, and it's kind of fitting for his run style. The guy just like runs like a madman. 15 touches this game, and like when doing the primers research, Lindsay is the clear cut guy here. And going down the stretch, I think that he's someone that if you can trade for him, I still would. Even though they lost another offensive lineman, but if you look at their playoff schedule, they're gonna play at San Francisco, at home against the Browns, and then on the road against the Raiders. Yeah, I mean, Phillip Lindsay is an excellent trade target. And if you're in the fantasy playoffs already and you have Lindsay, like, congrats, because that's like I don't know if you could ask for a better playoff schedule from Lindsay. All of those are winnable games for Denver, who seems to be trying to hang around the playoff race, even though it's probably not going to be likely. But not much here, man. I mean, I'm going to go back and look at the matchups here between Casey Hayward. Did he match up with Cortland Sutton? Did they stick him on Emmanuel Sanders? How they approached that situation? Because I didn't watch too much of this game. The afternoon games were kind of just boring to me. So I was trying to get some work done on a short week with Thanksgiving coming. So I was working while trying to watch that. So I'm going to have to go back and watch this one in condensed version. But no big takeaways outside of the fact that Phillip Lindsay looked really good. And I love that the Broncos eliminated Devontae Booker. He saw just one target in this game, no carries. That makes me very happy because all the touches should go to Phillip Lindsay and Royce Freeman.
No, absolutely. That's something that we've always sort of talked about. No matter what, Booker was always cutting into the work. Yep. So you can never really rely on Royce Freeman. But again, he gets into the end zone here. And Booker, yeah, I don't think he got a touch in this. No, he got one catch for 4 yards in this game. So I agree. Phasing him out is probably the best thing that could happen for fantasy owners. On the other side of the ball, Keenan Allen continues his second half just surge, as we basically talked about for much of the first half. 12 targets, 9 catches, 89 yards, and a touchdown. Antonio Gates comes alive. 5 catches for 80 yards and a touchdown. I know, crazy. And Melvin Gordon does not find the end zone, but again, has a pretty awesome game overall with, I believe, 156 total yards. Anything you want to take away here from the Chargers side of the ball?
Keenan Allen had a game better than I thought he would. I've been saying to buy Keenan Allen for the last couple weeks, saying that, you know, he's going to have that surge over the second half of the season. You want to get ahead of it. I did not expect him to deliver wide receiver one numbers this week against Chris Harris Jr. On the touchdown he scored, there was nobody even close to him in coverage, so I don't even know what happened on that play.
I know, by the way, I'm not sure because I didn't watch that closely. I did see Chris Harris go to the locker room at one point. I do not know if he was out for much of the game or the second half or anything like that. I did see that he had gone into the locker room at one point, just in case that is the explanation for how Allen kind of went off a little bit.
Yeah, because like the matchup, I mean, Chris Harris Jr. I consider to be the best slot cornerback in the game. So, I mean, Allen, I'd be curious to see where the production came from a lot of the time. As I mentioned, this game was not like at my the forefront of me like watching. The one I watched a lot in the afternoon was the Philadelphia New Orleans. I like that one was the one I kept on looking up at.
Yeah, let's go to that one then. I mean, is there anything? I mean, unless you want to say something,
I'm just
about
upset that Mike Williams is not a bigger part of this offense. Like every time I see the guy, like the one catch he had, one of the catches he had today was just like, you know, he skies over the defender and it's just like he snags the ball. It's like I'm really puzzled at why he's not seeing more work. And then to see Antonio Gates with 80 catches and a touchdown, it just makes me feel stupid is all it does, because Antonio Gates, like I had written in the primer, he had been going down in snap counts every single week. Like you saw, like he was on the verge of retirement. Like I thought that they were going to make him inactive soon because I thought he played like maybe 13 snaps the last game and they had been trending down, like he had been going down. So see him here is laughable. I'm not going to take anything from it, but it's laughable.
Yeah. Yeah, I did see the Mike Williams catch that you're talking about, and it's awesome. It's like he's catching a tennis ball, right? Yeah. It just sort of comes in there, and it's just so easy to just pluck it out of the sky. Yeah, it would be great to see him get more involved, but unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be happening quite as fast as we wanted. Final game, we talked about it briefly when we started, Saints 48, Eagles 7. I mean, everything on the Saints offense is working, but you want to talk about Tre'Quan Smith? I mean, 13 targets, 10 catches, 157 yards and a touchdown, or you know what, Tags? I'm going to leave it to you, buddy. Tell me what you can talk about. Mark Ingram, 16 carries, 103 yards and 2 touchdowns, whatever you want to talk about.
Well, I explained it to someone this week because like someone saw my rankings and I had Mark Ingram, I think, as my number 13 running back, maybe number 14 this week against Philadelphia, which like when you say it out loud, you're like, that does seem pretty high. But someone asked me, they're like, what's up with that? Like Ingram, really, after one big game, you're going to rank him up there? I was like, well, it's been the last 2 weeks I've had him there. But the reason is because like the way I rank players, is I do it like in like logical sense, where would I start this player over this player? I would not have started Joe Mixon over Mark Ingram today because I didn't like the matchup. Mark Ingram plays for an offense that's continually putting up 40 points per game. Like that team is unstoppable. Yes, Alvin Kamara is going to get his. Yes, Alvin Kamara might get more red zone work, but that doesn't mean Mark Ingram is chopped liver. And we saw Ingram get more red zone work this time. And it's like over 100 yards, 2 touchdowns. Awesome. It's like, oh, you want to double Michael Thomas? Okay. And they did. It was hilarious. Actually, I'm watching a highlight of it right now where I remember seeing this during the game where Michael Thomas, the Eagles legit double teamed him off the line of scrimmage when he lined up in the slot, which you're basically saying everybody else is in man coverage. They just literally breeze drops back, drops a dime right over the shoulder of a linebacker to Alvin Kamara, or the safety to Alvin Kamara for the touchdown. Like, it was just beautiful. Like, it's poetry in motion watching this offense when it's clicking like it is. And we always knew that Philadelphia's defense, their secondary, was in bad shape. Well, in very bad shape. It's worrisome that they couldn't get any pressure on Breeze because he was missing his starting left tackle for this game. There's just so much that the Saints can do. They can beat you in so many ways in so many different games, and it doesn't matter the matchup because they're that good.
They really are. It was remarkable to watch, frankly. I mean, I know the Eagles are banged up. I know Ronald Darby's out for the season. But again, come on. I mean, they could do whatever they wanted at any given point. It's really just a remarkable thing to watch. Not so much on the other side of the ball where the Eagles scored just 7 points. Carson Wentz has a pretty terrible game. Let's talk briefly about Josh Adams. I mean, they barely run the ball. I think they only had 12 rushing attempts on the game, but Josh Adams, he's 7 of them, 53 yards and the touchdown. Is he finally going to be at least a guy who you can quasi rely on, at least as an RB3 or flex?
He was someone that I was going to have as like a buy low after this game because I didn't think he would do anything against the Saints. The Saints have been one of the best teams against the run all year long, and I didn't feel like he was going to do much. But I felt like he was going to be a buy after this game. Obviously, seeing him go 7 for 53 and a touchdown here and actually being utilized, they threw him a screen pass. He actually saw 6 targets, which is something he hasn't seen all year. That was always, I was always hesitant to move him up in my rankings just because if he's not being used in the passing game, it's kind of like the LeGarrette Blount role in this offense. And I really don't want a part of it. But knowing that Corey Clement hasn't done anything, knowing that Wendell Smallwood is just a guy, they are clearly going to go forward with him as like the guy. And it's not to say that he's going to be extremely consistent, but I think you could put him in that conversation with guys like LeSean McCoy, like Kenyon Drake, where they're not going to be every week like top tier performers, but you could stick him in your lineup and expect a reasonable floor from them.
Yeah, I agree. I think this game, frankly, is the one that's going to kind of finally open some eyes and say, you know what, enough of this. You know, Corey Clement, Wendell Smallwood, the offense just doesn't work as well as when we go through Adams. So I do think that a bigger workload is coming. I'm not sure he's going to be, you know, he's going to be like a little bit closer to the wide receiver three of running backs, in that I don't think every game is going to be awesome, but I do think there's going to be enough of them to make him viable. On the passing side of the ball, real quick, I do just want to point out that Golden Tate did see 8 targets in this game, 5 receptions for 48 yards. They talked about how they expected him to get more involved in this game, so hopefully he can be a little bit more of an asset going forward. But any last things you want to touch on in this game, Tags, before we sign off here?
No, not really. It was a pretty disappointing week, day of football. Like, I really hope that the Eagles Saints game was gonna like have a better, like more competitiveness throughout it. I really felt like Carson Wentz was gonna have a good game in this one against the Saints defense, but to see the Saints defense step up in this game, it's like they were the team. I actually had my preseason prediction for the Super Bowl was the Saints versus Jags in the Super Bowl, and the Saints, that's looking good, but the Jags, not so much.
No, not so much. But that's all right, buddy. 1 out of 2 ain't bad. They are looking great. Should be a great close of the season. But that's it for today's show. Before we go, I just want to say a quick thank you to the sponsors of today's show, FanDuel.com, where your fantasy season never dies, and they have contests for everyone. And Lisa Mattress. Remember, with our offer code, you can get $160 off a Lisa Mattress. Just go to lisa.com/fantasypros. That's LEESA.com/fantasypros. On behalf of everyone here at Fantasy Pros, thanks for listening. Enjoy your football. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve slowly in a pool full of your love. I don't even know how the chemistry works when your moves are kicking in the dirt, kicking in the sand and stirring up trouble. Hey, parents. Looking for something fun to listen to in the car with your kids? Blippi and Mika have a brand new podcast, Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. Each week, the Blippi Mobile will take your kids to amazing places. Your kids will learn awesome new things about the places and things they see and hear. It's a fun, interactive listening experience for the whole family. Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.